This podcast is called Obsessed. Joseph Scrimshaw and his guest get some secrets off their chest. You should listen. It's the best.
Hello, and thanks for listening to Obsessed with me, Joseph Scrimshaw. I am sitting here with a wonderful person about to have a terrifying podcast experience because we're here to talk about Stephen King. And my guest is Tanya Wershow. Is that correct?
Wershow.
Wershow. Tanya, tell the listening humans a little bit about who you are.
So I have a theater degree, which has got me absolutely nothing. I now work as an office assistant for an abstracting company and do basic office stuff.
An abstracting company?
Yeah. So like when you buy a house, you have to make sure that the people who are selling it to you legally own it.
Okay.
That's what we do.
Okay.
That's what an abstractor does. Like, they'll go through all the records from like 40 years ago and say, oh, this person sold it to this person who sold it to this person who sold it to this person.
And do you find sometimes that there's just like a ghost owned it or there was no one there?
Well, yeah. Like, sometimes people won't have filed the right paperwork. Okay. Or sometimes it'll go through foreclosure and then banks get involved and there's lots of paperwork.
Is someone who currently owns a home that is a sort of terrifying concept in general, and also calling it abstract because nothing feels locked down or certain when you're buying a home.
No, but
so adding the word abstract doesn't help.
No, not really. But I mean, it's good work. It's steady, and there's always people buying houses, so that helps.
Cool. And there's time to listen to podcasts at your work?
Oh, not at work.
Okay.
No, not at work.
All right, just checking. So your obsession is Stephen King.
Yes.
So I have some kind of general questions and some weirder questions, as we do on the podcast.
Oh, really?
So when and how did Stephen King come into your life?
So the first time, I was aware of Stephen King because there were TV commercials for his books and whatever. And
right.
There was one in particular where the first time I saw him, I remember he freaked me out because he had the huge Coke bottle glasses at the time. It was like 87 or whatever when he was also in his Coke phase. So like there was this commercial for to get his books sent to you like on a monthly basis. It was some subscription club.
Mm-hmm.
And like he freaked me out. And I was like, I don't want to read. But I was reading like Christopher Pike and R.L. Stine and like the Goosebumps series and some of the young adult horror.
Yeah.
And then I went to my friend's sixth grade birthday party. She was turning, I was like 11 or something. And we went out to a hockey game. So we got our blood and violence out of the way. And we came home. And the next morning, we were watching It on TV. And I absolutely hated horror movies. I can't, like, horror movies freak me out.
Okay.
Like, I just can't.
Were you watching It on purpose or did you just happen
to
see
it? They put
it
in.
Okay.
And I was just like there. And I you know, I wasn't allowed to watch R movies or anything. So this was a big deal that it was like a scary It thing. And then her mom started telling me that the book was so much worse. And I was like, really? Because for whatever reason, on the written page, it doesn't bother me.
Okay.
But like when I see things jump out at me, then I just totally freak out.
I think that's pretty normal because you have time to process with a book. You can put it down if you want, but the clown is just up in your business on television. There's nothing you can do about it.
And so for like 2 weeks, I would not go in the bathroom by myself. And like, I was just Stephen King. Oh my God. You know, and then I actually picked up the book and I read it, and reading it every time I read one of his books, it's this inexplicable emotional state happens to me where I'm literally like out of focus with the rest of the world. Like, and it doesn't matter if it's one of his, you know, coked out Tommyknockers. It doesn't matter if it's Carrie or one of his like Dreamweaver post van accident things.
Okay.
I just, all of them just make me feel this. It's only when I read his books too.
Do you feel like he's just the most successful at sucking you into his world? So you feel so involved in his world that you're not connecting to the real world?
There's a lot of that. Like just the way he puts the sentences together and formulates the world that is his world, because all his books connect, and you know there's the whole thing where everything, like, he wrote himself into the one of the he wrote himself into one of the Gunslinger series books, and it's just like, oh my gosh, it's totally inclusive, and like, yeah, it's just I never feel that way with any other author, at least I haven't yet.
Interesting. I really relate to the seeing him.
Yeah.
Before you've read his books? Because I remember, like, it was a time in life where I can't remember what was going on in school or that, but I was really being reinforced with the don't judge books by their cover, mm-hmm. don't judge people based on how they look. Mm-hmm. And I saw a picture of Stephen King.
Yeah,
like, yeah, this fucker writes horror.
Yeah,
it's terrifying.
I was like, dude, because I'd never seen him before. I'd heard about him, you know, whatever. When my parents were like, oh, this is a scary movie, or he writes scary books or whatever. But when I saw him, I was just like, whoa, that's not. Whoa.
Yes, he has that lovely horror twinkle in his eye, which is just a creative person's twinkle.
Well, and I'm sure
I think
the coke helped.
So you obviously, you know a lot about him. Obviously, to be this interested in his books, you've learned about him.
Yeah. I didn't like research him or anything, but when I was in high school, my freshman year of high school, between my freshman and sophomore year, I wrote him, actually. Like, I called New York and I tracked down his publisher and I, like, was trying to contact him personally. Like, I didn't want a fan club and I didn't want, you know, his handler or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily succeed, but.
So you're trying to write a letter to him.
Yeah. Like.
Okay.
And so to give myself more legitimacy than just some sort of like fangirl, I totally made up this story about how I was trying to interview him for my high school newspaper because I wanted to get on the newspaper and they needed a sample. Of writing, which was totally not the case.
So the letter wasn't just like you were trying to send him a message. You were trying to create a relationship where you could talk
like,
to him more often?
I was like, can I interview you? Here's my phone number. You know, call me. Have your people call me, whatever.
Did he get the letter?
Somebody did. Like, because I went through his publisher, so I think I got a little closer than just a random person. But I got actually, like, a really, like, I don't know, two and a half inch thick packet back from his publisher with like all this interview background material on him and stuff. And I went and looked for it and I don't know what happened to it. Cause like, I'm like, Mom, do you know what happened to my Stephen King stuff? And she's like, no, honey, I think we lost it when you went to college. I'm like, crap. But
so if you were able to talk to him like today, what is it that you want to say to him? Were you just looking for the connection or do you have like a message?
No, I'm not like, oh my gosh, you have to, you know, do this thing or like, what are your political or, you know, I'm not trying to like, but like just to meet him and be like, do you want to have a beer or, you know, like hang out
but
with
him? And if not, it's not a creepy thing. If he just showed up and was like, hey, I read your letter from these
from
years
like
ago.
From like 1991 or something.
I would enjoy a beer. And you sat down and you had a beer with Stephen King. What would you want to talk to him about?
Oh, God. There's so many things that I'm sure he's been asked like a bazillion million times. Like, right. I would just hope that I wasn't too fangirlish and didn't like make his security people come and like.
But you've worked with the convention in Twin Cities, the Convergence.
Yeah.
So you've had a chance to interact professionally with well-known people, right?
Yes, but there's like, I've always tried, in my volunteer work, I tried to steer away from the people that I would totally geek girl out about.
So you only worked with people that you just didn't give a fuck about.
No. Like I did, because like I Brian King, I'd read his stuff and you know he's a horror writer too, so it was right up my alley and oh it was amazing to meet him, but I wasn't like something about Stephen King to me, like I don't know if I would immediately faint if I saw him like in within 5 feet of me or something. But like it would just be one of those like I'm not really religious, but if you could meet a god, it would be like, I mean, seriously, it's
but
just
but
that.
But that's my point with Convergence. Like, you've interacted with people who are very famous, very well known. So you've had that experience of, they're real people. But your love of Stephen King is too
just,
deep.
It's too much. Just, like, I would just, no, I couldn't, like, I'm speechless just thinking about it. Because, like, I just can't, because I've read so much. And I, you know, like, and the other thing is, like, when you're so obsessed with a person, you create like this image of them in your brain and it's almost like you don't want to sully the image that you have because that makes some of the magic of the obsession go away.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. I'm always interested in this.
Like
if you
met a king squirrel, like I think you,
I would have a lot of questions. I wouldn't know what the hell a king squirrel is, but I'd be really excited. But yeah, if there was some squirrel deity who could give me solve all of the mysteries of squirrels, would I want those mysteries solved?
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, but I'm really fascinated with that, with the interaction, that line between feeling like you know someone intimately through their work somebody like Stephen King is very open about his life.
Right.
It's very easy to find out very personal things yes. about him. But then there's just that raw, in the moment human interaction where mm-hmm. it doesn't matter how famous anyone is. They have a heart that can stop beating any second
exactly.
like anybody else. They're human beings. Some of them drink beer. not all of them. But you can sit down and have a beer with them and like how do you interact with this person as a human?
Right.
And get rid of the sort of artifice of this
right.
person is a god, because none of us are gods, obviously.
Right. And then too, I'm also the kind of overthinking person who would be like, oh my God, does he think I'm only being nice to him because he's Stephen King? Or like, you know, and I would like have these like layers of like
yeah.
nervousness and social anxiety about
it. What do you like? What is a fun kind of conversation for just like you're just interacting with like a friend? What kind of things do you enjoy talking about?
What do I talk? Well, I talk about Stephen King.
that wouldn't help.
No, probably not.
I'd like to tell you about yourself, sir.
I'd probably talk about LARP, which
that's
is
awesome.
One of my other obsessions, but I don't know if he would even know what that was.
I think most people listening to the podcast would probably know, but that it's live action role playing.
Yes.
So it's like Dungeons and Dragons, but you put on costumes and you get up and you move around.
Well, but there's like different kinds of LARP too.
Right. But that's just the most basic
yeah.
role playing. It's,
yeah,
it's role playing on its feet, right?
Yeah. It's like improv acting with
yeah.
rules.
Would you want to LARP with Stephen King?
That would be fucking amazing. Oh. Okay, now I'm just making him a vampire character in my head. And that's wrong.
Would he be a vampire if you were
well,
LARPing with him?
I play vampire the most. Like, well, okay. No, I suppose if we did, he'd be a better guru.
What is a guru?
It's the werewolf. It's the name for a
okay.
werewolf.
So you would cast him as a... Why is he a werewolf more than a vampire?
Well, because... Well, he's older now, so he's got the salt and pepper hair.
Okay.
Or, like, the more gray hair.
Yeah.
And that just... And sometimes he has a scruffy beard thing in his author photos.
So just on a practical level, when you're LARPing... A guru? Did you say?
Guru.
A guru. it doesn't sound very. I feel like I'm being disrespectful to werewolves to call them gurus. It sounds
well,
so cute,
like
the little.
Too.
Okay,
like
I'm going to say werewolves because
okay,
otherwise
yeah,
I
no,
feel like
fine.
I'm being a dick. Like, hey, you little guru, do you turn into a guru
well,
once a month?
Just...
Like, so how does one actually? If Stephen King was playing a guru,
yeah.
and then he needed to transform during the LARP
right.
into his wolf state, what? Is that just like a mask? How do people make the transformation?
Like most of the time, there's just a signal. Like you put your arms up above your head when you're really, really big and
yeah.
in your big form. Otherwise, people have different pictures that they'll wear and they'll flip their pictures over.
Okay.
So like they'll have character.
The picture is elegant. That's a nice elegant way to do it.
Yeah.
To flip the picture. But I really love the mental picture you've created now that
Stephen King
is playing
around,
this
like,
very like serious character. And then like the moon's out and his arm goes up. I'm a guru. That's awesome. So it seems like just through your appreciation of his art, you've got to be maybe a little obsessed with the person because it's hard
bit.
To celebrate
yeah.
to separate
yeah.
That level. Cool. So I have some more specific questions. How much do you feel like you learned about the real world from reading Stephen King? Because I know for me that was
Ooh.
Reading some of his books were the first time that I really truly encountered a lot of swearing, a lot of sex.
Yeah, I would say a lot. Domestic violence was one of the first things I encountered because one of the first books I read was It.
Yeah.
And there's the huge scene where Bethany and her then, well, I can't remember if he's her ex at that point, but they get
yeah.
into this huge fight and they're
yeah,
like,
yeah, I just recently reread It.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I was surprised.
There
that,
was a
oh,
huge
yeah,
amount of that.
Like 20 pages of
yeah.
violent fighting.
And I was just like, you know, and coming from the home that I did, it was pretty bland. So a lot of the things that he brought in about death and like just gore and just physicality,
yeah.
like it was something that I hadn't really experienced because I was more, you know, play with ponies and Barbies. And it wasn't that dark yet.
Yeah, there's not a lot of domestic abuse with ponies.
No.
Not stories. About
not usually,
that.
No.
How about the swearing? Did you pick up words from Stephen King?
No. I picked up new combinations, maybe. But
monkey fucker, right? He says that a lot. I have no idea.
I don't remember that one. But no, it was. It also gave me a freedom with my swearing that I hadn't
okay.
necessarily had before.
Yeah.
Not that I swore a lot at the time, because again, I started reading him when I was 11. So
yeah,
you know.
I remember somebody showed me. I think it was Carrie when I was like in grade school.
Yeah.
And it was like a really like, I've got contraband.
Oh, yeah.
And
totally.
They flipped to some like page or something horrifying and scary and gore was happening. But there was just like some casual conversation right above that in which people were like swearing about pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what stuck with me is like, oh, here's a book where people are talking like mom and dad.
Exactly.
This is so human. I don't really care about the gore or whatever, but the swearing is awesome. This is kind of a jumping off from Stephen King question. If you could be as productive at anything in life as Stephen King is at writing, what would it be? What would you want to be able to do with the sort of the speed and quality that he is famous for?
It would either be writing or performing. Like, that's one thing in my life that I really miss. Like, just because I used to write short stories and I used to write whatever, and then I just ran out of time, and then you don't get it back when you have kids. And So, writing or performing. I mean, I haven't been on the stage since I worked at the Renaissance Festival like 7 years ago. No, more than seven, like 9 years ago.
So you would want to be as prolific as Stephen King at being a Renaissance Festival performer?
Well, not necessarily Renaissance, but whatever I could get my hands on. Yeah, like if I could do a show every night, that would be so cool.
You don't feel like you're performing for your children every night?
No. No, they go to bed by 7.
Show's over.
Yep.
Time for drinks.
All
done. Awesome. LARPing is a kind of performance, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is. Well, but it's not like, it doesn't have the reputation that, say, actually being on a stage with, like, a theater behind you does. I mean, I did use it as an outlet for my performing for a while, but most of your games start at 7 and go until 2 in the morning, and when you have kids, you can't do that.
Right. So if you could get Stephen King to write any story that you wanted, what would you make him write?
I actually want to see him write fanfic.
About his own characters or about other characters?
No. He needs to leave his own world for a while because he's building it up. He's got it so intertwined with stuff. He just needs to come back to somebody else's world for a while.
So would you have him write like Princess Leia and Indiana Jones?
No. It'd be like some two random characters from Star Trek. Like a red shirt and Uhura or something. And I would just make him focus
maybe
on
Tuvok
them.
And Uhura.
Not Tuvok. No. he's too Vulcan. He wouldn't do that. But so, no, just some random nameless red shirt. And Uhura just goes and has a one-night stand. And, you know, Stephen King writes about them picking her up in the bar. And
for like 1,000 pages, right?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Like the longest fanfic ever.
Well, no, because it would be awesome. Because you could really get into the detail and like talk about what kind of Romulan ale they had and what year it was. And he does that with the detail.
Yes. So that's an excellent segue my next question. Have you ever just felt the desire to edit one of his books?
Dreamcatcher.
Okay, I don't know Dreamcatcher. You described Dreamcatcher as his post-van accident.
Yes, it was. I don't know whether he pulled it out of his vault or not. There's a rumor that he had a vault of pre-written stories that after his accident he just went to and used.
Okay.
Basically without really touching them up or maybe putting as much effort in. Which I understand because the van accident was a big thing.
Yeah, and for people who don't know, he was basically walking and struck by a van.
Yeah,
right?
He was walking along the side of the road and a minivan came up behind him and just and he broke like ribs and legs and it was very, very serious.
Yeah, like actual real life horror.
He writes about it a little bit in On Writing and you can also see there's a book called Duma Key. That he wrote where he talks about one of the characters in the book goes through physical therapy and you have to imagine that is taken at least partly from personal experience about how hard it is to get back and in control of your own body and stuff after it's been so horribly mangled.
Yeah. So Dreamcatcher?
Yeah, Dreamcatcher. It's not bad. They made a movie out of it.
that just automatically happens, right?
Yeah, right nowadays. but, you know, like, it didn't flow as well. There wasn't as many interesting, there wasn't as many interesting character plots. And it just, like, And then there were aliens, and then it was sort of done.
So his later career, I'm only really familiar with, like, I think I read It and Misery and maybe, like, one other thing. But I know his later career is not as horror-centric, right? Especially not to kind of tropes of horror like he had been writing before.
No, and, like, right now he's actually started to write mystery novels or hard crime novels. And they still have a supernatural element, but I just finished one called Joyland.
Okay.
And it was about an amusement park where there was supposedly this ghost there. And I think he wrote it concurrently with Dr. Sleep, which is a sequel to The Shining.
Oh, okay.
And because there's a kid in it that has sort of a Shining ability, but it's very, very low key. Like, that's not the main character. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is about this guy figuring out who the murderer was.
Right.
And it was really, really neat to see him turn away and sort of have that supernatural element. But I was still, his writing still put me in that emotional spot even without the horror.
So do you feel like he's grown as a author? Do you feel like he's just simply evolved in that he has not necessarily, that he has simply changed, or has he become better?
I think both. I mean, like, you always have to evolve as a person. Like, I think you can't, if you go through life without evolving, then what's the point?
It's kind of horrible, especially for an author if you have nothing new to say.
But I mean, like, I think every performer or artist comes to a point where they have to change what they're doing because they're running out of that thing.
Yeah.
And I think this is a good move for him. Like, I think it allows him to express the worlds that he likes without necessarily focusing on stuff that he's already done.
Yeah, so that seems to come up a couple of times, that you feel like he's referencing a lot back to his previous work.
He totally is.
Do you feel like he's actually having these sort of like sci-fi Star Trek or Doctor Who problem where he's starting to get into continuity issues with himself?
I wouldn't say continuity, because he can just change it and be like, oh, it was a parallel universe, or oh, it wasn't.
That's an exact Doctor Who Star Trek problem.
Well, it was like a different path of the beam. But for some reason, no, I'm serious. Like, he's done that. I mean,
that's why I'm laughing.
If you read Regulators and, what's the other one that came out at the same time? He wrote one as Richard Bachman and one as himself. And both of them happened in the same town. They're the same people, but different stuff happens.
Okay.
Like, within the same time period.
So is that a purposeful artistic choice, or is that a sort of like, I don't want to deal with this, so I'm going to do a hand wavy other universe thing?
I think it's a purposeful choice.
Okay.
And the thing that I liked about Joyland was when he did it, it was just slight enough that you caught the reference, especially if you were familiar with him, but it didn't overpower the story he was actually writing.
Cool.
Which was the murder mystery.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So do you think over his whole long career, you've read everything pretty much, right?
There may have been one or two short stories I haven't caught yet, but yeah.
So you've read his whole oeuvre. Do you think he has like one primary theme? One
theme?
Or idea? Like, what ties them all together?
I think, I've sort of thought about this, and I think it might be hope.
Wow, nice.
Because, like, I mean, in other horror that you read, you can get to the point where the characters are just fucked. There's nothing that they can do. And his books never give me that feeling. Like, even like when Carrie's hand pops up at the end, I mean, that's not a bad thing. That's like a continuation of her spirit, of what she had that was good.
Right.
Even though it's supposed to creep you out and, you know, whatever. But, but yeah, like the bike at the end of it.
Yeah, that's totally extremely hopeful.
I think there's more or less depending on what you're reading, but there's always this feeling like something else will happen that will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else will find a way to persevere through this or after this.
So do you think that's part of the reason that you like to kind of escape into his world? I mean, you were describing right at the top of the podcast kind of feeling out of sync.
Yeah.
With the rest of the world when you're kind of inside one of his stories?
I like it because even if what I'm reading right now makes me feel totally discombobulated, what will happen is I'll know that when I finish the story, there'll be a path back to where I'm supposed to be.
Okay, so like he's going to take you down into all of these sort of horrors and ambiguities, some of them real and some of them aliens.
Right.
And Guru. And then, but at the end,
But then you get to come back.
Your soul will become popping up like Carrie's hand.
Yeah, and it'll be okay.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So that kind of ties into the question I wanted to ask you next is, obviously he's really associated with horror, mm-hmm. and I think it pops up in films and books that people kind of describe the idea of seeing the world as different genres.
Mm-hmm.
So do you see the world, our real world, in sort of horror terms now that you've spent so much time with Stephen King?
Probably. I'm definitely more cynical and morbid than most people. my husband calls it my catastrophization method. Like I can immediately go to the worst thing that will happen. Like, my daughter has a cough and I'm like, oh my God, she's got tuberculosis, or, you know, she's got SARS or whatever. Like, right. And I can just immediately go to that bad place, even though it's not really ever going to be that.
Yeah.
But I get, and yeah.
Do you act on those things, though? Or does your mind just kind of automatically explore what could be the most horrible thing?
It goes there. I try and rein it back. but no, there's been a couple times where I probably have done unrealistic things because I've been freaked out about something that really wasn't going to happen or wasn't the big boogeyman that I thought it was.
Yeah. So when you're reading the kind of the more horrible passages, mm-hmm. How do you feel when you're reading them? You started out, you know, being scared of the clown on TV.
Yeah.
Found it easier to deal with in the books. There is in some of his novels just a lot of just graphic horror.
Oh yeah, totally.
And how do you feel about that, you know, that you've spent, you know, a big chunk of your life reading it?
I'm possibly desensitized to it on the page. Mm-hmm. Like, in my own imagination, like, I've made walls, so like I can be imagining along with the passage that I'm reading, but then I won't quite see exactly what's happening.
Okay.
But I certainly would not be desensitized to it in real life. Like, like if I see blood in really real life, enough. I still freak out and I'm like, oh my God, no.
Yeah. Well, that I'm really, really glad to hear that. Since we're alone in my home near the kitchen where there are knives.
You think we're alone.
No clowns. Did you develop a clown phobia from it?
No, I developed a phobia of the bathroom.
Right, because the
blood. Comes out of the sink and the shower and the toilet and has this other short story where this finger, like, this guy's watching Jeopardy in the hall and this finger climbs out of his toilet and it's got like a million bazillion knuckles.
Okay.
And it just keeps getting longer and longer and like opens the toilet lid and it comes out in the living room and he has a thing with toilets, I swear.
Yeah, well, a lot from the depths and the horror. So a long finger from the toilet. Like, a lot of Stephen King I really like. You know, like It, I think, like, there's a lot of, you know, parables for real life and allegories. And I, you know, a lot of his later work is like that. What the fuck is the allegory or the moment of hope from the endless finger coming out of a toilet?
The cops show up and they tape the finger down and then... No, I'm not. I'm serious. They put duct tape around the toilet so the finger can't go up.
And then does the
And then they like move? Flush it a bunch of times.
Okay.
No, and then he's just like, and now, you know, when I'm home alone, I think about it, but it's okay because it's never come back. And it's fine because the guy learned, you know, there's stuff that's more important than whatever he was worried about in the story.
So it's really a story about problem solving.
Yeah, it's a story about other stuff. But what I remember, of course, is the finger that comes and attacks you.
Do you remember what the other stuff was? Like, what,
I think he was having marital problems. Like, he lived in New
problems
York
are like
and
a finger in
he
the
was
toilet.
Worried about money and work and... You know, it's like all the normal day stuff. And then you put in the thing that you think about, which is the finger coming out of the toilet.
Yeah.
And then suddenly those normal stressy things don't seem that bad.
Yeah. There are very few times where I wish the podcast was a visual medium. Because speaking directly to listeners now, Tanya is making this wonderful finger gesture, which is sort of like Little Bunny Foo Foo. If Little Bunny Foo Foo only had one ear. The toilet finger is... dancing along like Little Bunny Poo Poo. It's very nice. Okay, so here's some of my weirder questions. Or more personal, I guess. If you were a supernatural character in a Stephen King novel, what kind of power or manifestation of your inner life would you want to have, or do you think you would have?
I don't know. I use my hands a lot, so it'd probably be something with my hands. I don't know what it would. Maybe I would be the finger. I don't know.
Be the finger. So Would it be an extension of your hands?
Yeah, like my hands would shoot out and do things without me knowing, maybe. I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily be the heroine in the story. I'd be like the creepy person.
Right, because yeah, he doesn't really write superheroes, superpower, right?
I mean, like the kids in It had they had their own sort of superpower in a weird,
right,
esoteric way.
Yeah, yeah, in a very hopeful way of like,
yeah, exactly.
It is very, if we believe, we can beat the scary clown Spider-Man.
Right.
Do you feel like you would be the sort of Carrie-like protagonist who is tortured?
Oh, God. No, I would just be the bad person. I would just be the person that everybody was freaked out about. I'd like live in the black house and, you know, yeah, nobody would go there and people would disappear. And
your friends over to LARP and the hands would get them?
No, well, if they were my friends, I suppose they'd be evil too. And then we would all just have an evil party and maybe sacrifice some kids. I don't know.
So if you could get Stephen King to write this story, would you be happy with being like in story is the
oh, totally.
Thing that gives the hope focus?
I would embrace that because that would mean that my real life wasn't really like that.
Wow, Stephen King's novel, The Hands?
Yeah, something like that. That would be awesome.
That would be great. So obviously we've talked about It a lot. And for anybody who doesn't know It, the shtick of it is that it's a creature that takes the shape of
whatever you're afraid of.
And apparently the creature just assumes that we're all afraid of clowns because he spends a bunch of time as Pennywise the clown.
Well, like Pennywise, the reason he was Pennywise was like, oh, I'm not going to scare them first. First, I'm going to like be all happy. And then if that works, then I don't have to work on scaring them.
Right. See, I remember reading that. And even when I read that incredibly young,
like,
I was
no.
like, bullshit. Bullshit.
Well, it did work for a couple of the kids. So that's why I was like, oh, well, he was just trying the clown thing. And if they were scared of it, double bonus.
I suppose that does make sense. Because, yeah, a couple of his novels are very, very focused on what it is to be a child
in
the 50s. And the clowns weren't quite as scary yet.
No.
I think that they're...
No, because
I think
Pennywise made so many of us like freak out about
I think
clown.
Culturally he is like the big breaking point, but I was terrified
really?
Of clowns long before that. I think that there is something... I think that there is something unnatural about them.
Oh, see, I used to watch Bozo all the time. I wanted to be on the show and throw the little ball in the bucket and just like hang out and dance on his shoes.
I was happy to watch Bozo on the television. Bozo in real life, I would have
been gone.
I would have screamed and hit him in the nuts and run
no.
away. I would have screamed stranger danger and punched Bozo in the nuts. And I can't remember. I think my parents took me to an amusement park when I was pretty young. And I can't remember. I think it was maybe like Flintstones characters or somebody in like a giant costume that was clearly supposed to be fun. But it's that uncanny valley thing of this isn't right.
Right.
You are hiding something from me. I don't know what you are underneath that.
Sure.
And you're going to murder me and I want to murder you first. So those are some of my feelings about clowns. But my question is, so obviously there's Pennywise the clown. What manifestation would you see if it was trying to get to you?
That's a really good question. I might see myself.
Well, that's deep.
Because, yeah, but it would be like all the bad parts of myself. Like you know how he saw Darth Vader in the cave? Luke saw Darth Vader in the cave.
Right.
It would be sort of like that, but it would be me. And it would be like, but just the parts of me that I hate. And then the fact that I couldn't escape from Pennywise would just make it all the worse because I was killing myself. And like, then I have this existential thing about you're killing yourself with your own stress and your own flaws.
So you would see super, super stressed out, Tanya?
Yeah, super, super stressed out, super, super flawed me. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. What would you see if Pennywise was trying or if it was trying to show you something nice to lure you in first?
Oh, my family. I would totally go. Like, there would be no question if my family was there. I would just be like, hey, we're going to go to a float. Let's go.
Yeah, sure, let's all float.
It'll take
nice.
A trip. It'll be nice. Let's go.
Nice. I think the thought for a lot of people of seeing themselves, I think it depends, like, depending on what kind of performer you are, if you're a performer, you get used to seeing or hearing yourself, and there's just that, I think all humans react to seeing or hearing themselves, and in some of us, if we perform a lot or have podcasts, you have to get used to seeing or hearing yourself. But it's fun to imagine, like, what sight of yourself as a physical object would be terrifying. And for me, I just Just imagine staring off into space, being really lazy and not procrastinating, and that would just terrify me. So if a car you owned was haunted, what kind of car would it be? Like, what make or model of car?
Oh, can I just have Christine? Like, is that just okay?
Sure.
She was 56 or 57, and she was cherry red and old. She was pretty.
What kind of actual car?
What do I have? I have a Prius right now. But I love old cars. I love the 50s, you know, with the tail fins and the... I love those. I love what Christine was. Like, if I could own a Christine, I would.
But I think that's what a lot of, you know, a lot of his stuff does relate to being a kid in the 50s in the iconography of the 50s. So what would be the iconography from your youth?
Oh, from my youth? Oh, that would probably be either the tiger from He-Man. Or like there was a car that you could get for Care Bears. It was basically a cloud, and then like the wheel was a rainbow that would just like, it was like a rainbow, and they had a little seat where you could put them in and you could just drive them around, and the rainbow was the wheel, and it would just go around.
A great haunted car.
That would be an awesome haunted car, wouldn't it?
That would be absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
I want that to be in the Star Trek fanfic too. The haunted rainbow car.
Oh, his stats would be horrible, though.
Cool. So here's another question. Who do you think would win in an actual fight? These authors are fighting with each other physically. Stephen King, H.P. Lovecraft, or Charles Schulz?
Who's Charles Schulz?
Peanuts guy.
Oh, okay. Do they have weapons?
Sure.
Okay. Well, Charles Schulz is automatically out because he just... No.
Are you not a fan of the peanuts?
It's okay. It's a little, it's too schmaltzy for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I think H.P. Lovecraft and Stephen King would gang up on Charles Schulz first to take him out. And then they would like sit down and have coffee or tea. And then they would just like, one of them would have Oddjob's top hat. H.P. Lovecraft would have like an odd job top hat, and he would just try and throw it at Stephen King.
And then
Stephen King would take a scythe and just right through his chest. Yeah.
So you little fanfic right there.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
I'm good at that.
Excellent. Okay. So I've got some questions about, I sometimes ask about how obsessed people are. Like, you seem pretty into Stephen King. Like, it affects your life a lot. It's a big part of your life. It's not a passing interest. So would you purchase and wear Stephen King underwear?
With his face, or could I have like one of his characters on it?
Either one. Would you? Well, this has come up before. Would you wear, if Stephen King's face was on underwear?
Well, yeah, I'd wear it. I was trying to figure out which one I'd like best.
Okay.
Because like a Pennywise instead of underwear, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
You know, Pennywise on your underwear? Oh, I got to go make an Etsy shop or something.
But you would wear Stephen King's...
Oh, totally.
Okay, yeah. Because I think I was talking to an episode about Peter Pan, and somebody thought it was disrespectful.
Yeah, I remember that. No.
To have
no,
the
author. It's a sign of, like, it's a way to keep them close to you. God, that's so horrible.
No.
I'm going to be put on a restraining order or something.
No. Okay, if Michael Bay made a movie based on a Stephen King novel, would you go see it?
Oh, do I have to? Which one?
Well, your choice.
Oh. Because some of his movies have been done really well, and some of them have been done really...
What are the good ones for you, and what are the bad ones?
Of Michael Bay's or Stephen King's?
No, Stephen King's adaptations.
Shawshank Redemption and Stand By Me.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the top ones. Like, people wouldn't even believe me when I told them that Shawshank was Stephen King. They're like, no!
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, totally. But I think that's more of the fact that they were short stories first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think his short stories transposed to film a lot better. You also have to remember, I don't like horror movies.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen a lot of
So I haven't seen a lot. Crossed that bridge from youth where you're like, you're okay with it on film now?
Well, no. Well, I mean, I try to be, but not really. I'd rather watch a B-horror movie that I can make fun of than an actual scary Stephen King movie. Like, I've never seen Pet Sematary. I've never seen Salem's Lot.
Wow.
I've never seen Christine. They made a movie of Christine, right?
I think so.
I think, yeah. I've seen most, some parts of Carrie. I watched it because it was in, well, I watched part of it that I saw at the birthday party, and then I saw most of it, but it was in French, and so I wasn't scared.
Why?
I was in France, and it was on the TV, and it was, like, dubbed in French.
Right, so, but did it make it silly?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was kind of like, well, it wasn't necessarily silly as absurd.
Uh-huh.
Like, because when they jumped out, you know, it's still, oh my God, he's jumping out at you. But like,
sacre bleu.
Well, because I'm sitting there, I'm watching John Ritter, you know, and he doesn't sound like John Ritter. He sounds like a French dude.
Yeah.
And it was very not.
So it's not about the visuals in the film.
It's a whole experience sort mm-hmm. of thing, like with the soundtrack and the, yeah. So, but if Michael Bay, I would watch it. I think I would watch it. Yeah.
So if Michael Bay remade Stand By Me.
Oh. Yeah, he'd blow up the bridge. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and Kiefer Sutherland's character would actually be shot and killed, right?
No, you can't kill Ace. You can't kill Ace. Ace will never die.
Excellent. Would you discuss Stephen King novels with Hitler?
Yes. Like I know most people like are like, oh, I don't know, what's Hitler doing?
How did he get there? Yeah, blah blah blah.
I've thought about this because I've listened to your podcast,
right.
Like, well, I've listened to all of your podcasts, and and I've thought about this question a lot, and I'm like, no, just no, I would, and I would tell him, I would use Stephen King to tell Hitler why he was making bad choices.
So, which novels would you give to Hitler to try to stop him from being such a bad man?
Well, Apt Pupil might work.
What is Apt Pupil?
Apt Pupil is it's a short story. It's in the same book as Stand By Me and Shawshank Redemption.
Okay.
Apt Pupil, I think, is the name of the movie that they made of it.
Okay.
But basically, it's this kid finds a Nazi guy who'd like run away from Germany and hid. And so he's like 80 years old now or whatever. And he's like really obsessed with Nazism. And this Nazi guy is like, dude, why are you so crazy? Stop being a Nazi. This is wrong. Did you learn nothing from my trials and tribulations? And then the kid goes and gets a rifle and ends up shooting a bunch of people. But I mean, like, it was a really interesting story as far as like, you know, the person who had done all these horrible things trying to convince somebody not to do these horrible things.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Nice. Do you think Hitler would get that sense of hope?
Probably not, but I don't know how well it would translate to German. So
he might find it silly, just like the French.
Well, there's not a lot of words that seem very hopeful in German. I mean, I don't know German really well, but they don't seem like they have a lot of words for happy things.
Well, maybe they could change that for Stephen King novels. They would have to come up with more words for hope. That's a hell of a twisty idea that we have come to. In the course of this podcast, that Stephen King could cause the German people to come up with more words for hope. That's very nice. Okay, so this is a thing I've been experimenting with a little bit on the podcast. Can you make, since it's an audio medium, can you make a noise that demonstrates your love of Stephen King?
I could scream, but I don't think you want me to do that.
Let's just for fun, put the microphone down on the table.
And go walk, like way over
walk
there?
Walk like 10 feet over there, okay. And then scream, and we'll see how it turns out.
Okay.
Do you want any sort of stimulus?
Oh, God, no. I'm a professional.
The scream followed by the giggle. That was pretty scary.
That's totally what I get, though, because, you know, you're scared, but then it's okay.
So several fractured, broken screams followed by a giggle.
Yeah.
That's Stephen King. Lovely. Do you have any final thoughts about Stephen King before we go into our final questions?
Read everything he wrote. It's seriously, even the bad stuff, even the, I'm coked out and I don't remember writing his stuff, has something in it. Like, I just can't imagine that it was a waste. Like, even the stuff that isn't my favorite, it still talks to me as a person and as an experience about life in general.
Cool. That's great. So I've got my final pompous questions.
Oh, yes.
We always ask.
Mr. Lipton.
Thank you. If you could travel back in time and hug any historical figure, who would you hug?
Assuming he wasn't armed or contagious, Shakespeare.
Nice. So how would you check with him if he was armed? Well, you could probably see armed, right?
Yeah, I would probably see most armed.
Right.
Oh, he should be like not drunk and lecherous.
So either. You would like to hug a non-diseased,
yeah,
clean, sober Shakespeare.
Yeah, like if you could get the real Shakespeare, but like dressed up like he was going to be on a PBS special, I would hug that guy.
Would you explain to him why you were dressing him up?
No, I mean it would just be regular clothes for him.
Okay,
but it would be like, you know, it would be Shakespearean,
right,
time. It would just be, he would be clean and.
I love that. I also would like to hug a clean Shakespeare.
Well, I mean, because he did so much. And
he did.
It would probably be like after one of his shows. So he was really pumped up. Like, yeah, we performed for the queen. Yay. But before he had time to go to the bar afterwards. So.
Right. The hugs, high fives backstage.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I'm sure is tradition.
Yeah,
before
totally.
They went to the pub. And you just slip in
yeah,
with the other like, Elizabethan
hug.
People. And,
and pop out. You know.
That's great. If you could force the whole world to sing a song together, what would that one song be?
Oh, man. I can't decide whether I want to be flippant or serious in my answer.
You could do both.
See
if we can tell the difference.
I really like... I think everybody should sing Imagine by John Lennon.
Aw.
But maybe not together.
You would like a discordant?
Well, I mean, it's going to be discordant anyway.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. He's everybody. But you want to imagine in a round then?
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool.
Like
we could like figure out the harmonics. And, yeah. Like you just start one place. It'd be like a wave of people singing, you know, like
nice.
How it goes around the studio. Yeah.
Excellent. Was that, that was both a sincere and flippant answer at once, right?
No.
Is that the sincere answer?
Yes.
Okay, what's the flippant answer?
This is the song that never ends.
That is very flippant.
Well, yes, it is.
Damning people to hell of a really annoying song.
An eternity.
And finally, the final question for everyone on the podcast, what is happiness?
Finishing a book and starting it over.
Thank you very much. That is our podcast.
You've been listening to Obsessed. Joseph Scrimshaw and his guest shared some stories with the rest. Rate 5 stars if you're impressed.
Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you.